1, 2, 3, car! A poster if you go to our store. Keep on ranking in the free world. Keep on ranking in the free world. You sing it, Julia, your turn. Go.
Keep on ranking in the free world. Nobody wants me to sing.
I just love to talk.
Very loud. Thank you.
He didn't even play that when he was here for Jazz Fest last week. He did not rock in the free world at that show.
Maybe we're not, well, we're not very free.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 123 of Rankin' the Beatles. Hope you're all doing wonderful. I am your host, Jonathan. With me, as always, except for last week when you weren't here with me.
Sorry.
But back in action. It's the queen of the ranks. I don't know. That's not a great name, but we'll go with that for today.
I don't want that.
I'll think of a better one.
Yeah, please.
Just give me some time. It's Julia. How are you, my love?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You look adorable today.
Thank you.
Everything's good in your world, I hope?
Sure.
Good. Okay.
Sure. Let's go with not terrible.
Let's make it an okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Things are great in our world because Beatles fans... Let It Be is out now. It's back.
We haven't watched it yet.
After 50 years of unavailability, except it's for, finally
like,
back.
You could get like bootlegs though, right?
Yeah, like bootlegs were readily available. Not readily available, but were out there, and it was dark and grainy and poor quality, you know, fifth generation VHS cassette bootlegs. And I think the most recent format it came out on was Laserdisc.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe Betamax.
Whoa.
I don't remember if Betamax was before Laserdisc. I don't remember.
Ooh.
We didn't have either when I was a wee lad.
Me neither. I think Betamax was first.
Yeah.
My brother had Laserdiscs.
That doesn't surprise me.
I know. He's like a very, likes to try out new technology kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he had like a bunch of Laserdiscs. And I was like, those are real big.
That's like the size of a pizza.
But I was like they were out at the same time as like CDs.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't get it.
That's a big, big CD.
Pop-pop. Yeah. I'm like, I don't get it. Yeah. I don't know why you would want a larger something.
Yeah. Well.
That's why he's like into cool tech things and I'm just lazy.
True. Well, friends, I hope you're all getting a chance to watch Let It Be. I hope you're enjoying it. We're going to watch it as soon as we're done with this, which we recorded this interview previously, like a week or two ago, and we're doing this intro today, the 8th. The episode comes out tomorrow, and Let It Be is out today. So I hope you're enjoying Let It Be. If
we're going to make this real short because Jonathan wants to go watch Let It Be.
Pretty much. So, yeah, good stuff. Well, with that in mind, let's go ahead and talk about our guest for this week. Y'all, he's the host of Fans on the Run, a podcast made by, for, and about Beatles fans. Since 2020, he's been interviewing Beatles fans from all walks of life, discussing their fandom journey. Our paths have crossed on a few occasions. We've done a couple of group podcasts with the Blotto Beatles crew a good while ago, but a great dude. I was on his show just a few months ago, and we got to spend some time hanging out with him at the Fest for Beatles Fans, where he was far and away the best-dressed fan in attendance every single day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So without further ado, y'all, please welcome Ethan Alexanian. Ethan, welcome to Rank of the Beatles. How you doing, bud? Good to see you.
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It's good to catch up. We, as I explained in our intro, which obviously we record separately, I've done your show in the past and we've collaborated on, you know, large group podcasts before. But it's fun to get to catch up, and we had such a good time, hanging out with you in person at the Fest. We were down kind of at the hallway, at the end of the hallway at our table, and I remember kind of looking down the other end of the ballroom that we were at, and like I could just see you come in like with the outfit you had on, and it was just like a peacock just like, you know, working its way down the aisle. It was so amazing just to see you come through in this great outfit.
I think you had someone with a fan on you, just like waving your hair like Beyonce style. Yeah, I feel like, please, I remember that.
Yeah, you need to do that if you don't.
Note to self.
How to Make an Entrance by Ethan Alexanian is the name of the new book. Oh, man, but it's good to see
you. I'm glad that's how the perception was. Oh, not yeah. Just, well, God, what a douchebag.
Oh, no. It was like, oh, shit, y'all, look at Ethan. Damn, dude. Loved it.
And this outfit you're referring to for the audience, is it the one with the ruffled shirt? It was and the
ruffled shirt, then like the Nehru jacket. Yeah, it was sharp. And I did find myself wondering, like, where you find clothes like that, because I don't know. I just know, like, the one guy that makes Beatles clothes that, like, I get my Shea Stadium jacket for the Walrus from, but you've got the wardrobe of fine threads.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
It's a very impractical piece of clothing. it's not like I can really do much else going places wearing a, you know, dressed like Austin Powers.
Although I would challenge you to like go get your groceries one day. In that outfit, or like, you know, go to the mall.
I may just show up to campus next semester day and just not address it.
Yeah. But just also about? Like lots of hand flourishes, like if you like just a lot of like hand motions and just like over.
Well, that's where the ruffled shirt comes in, because it's got all those ruffles around the wrist. And so
exactly,
if I just gesture a lot.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Get my money's worth.
But also don't acknowledge it. Just like, this is how you are every day.
Yeah. I love it. And you're like a child of the fest. You've been going since you were like a wee lad, right?
I've been going since 2019.
Okay.
Which isn't that many in the long run.
Right. But I feel like you've like made your presence really known.
Yeah,
I feel like everyone is
not
like,
really a child of the fest. Sure. Who, you know, started going when they were like four with their parents.
Yeah. Okay. Because it definitely feels like, you know, everyone's like, especially some of the older guests, they're like, "Oh, Ethan's like our son. He's our fest boy. We
our
love
fest
him."
So I've heard,
and I mean that in the best way, by the way.
Yeah. No, I know.
Oh man,
it's very endearing. Yeah. They're very sweet with you. It is. It's nice.
So yeah, man. I'm glad we could carve out some time and get you here on the show. You know, as we do with everybody when they come on our little enterprise here, and as I got to do on yours, I'd like to, you know, open the floor to you and ask you, you know, tell our listeners who may not be familiar with you or with Fans on the Run, kind of what's your origin story? How do the Beatles enter your life? What's that look like for you?
Okay, so the tables have turned.
My, how the turntables have turned.
I hate you.
That's, for those of you out there, sorry if I keep, you know, talking to the audience and not you. I'm just kind of used to that.
Yeah. Performing, baby.
The show I host, Fans on the Run, the whole shtick of the show is, you know, the origin story. Mm. So, I got into the Beatles the distant year of 2010, but back when I was eight. It was a combination of my uncle being a huge Beatles fan, one of my friends in like grade three talking about, wow, the Beatles are so cool, and my dad giving me a thumb drive full of, let's say, unofficially obtained MP3s.
Yeah. These Napster days, huh?
I think
it was 2010, it was post-Napster, yeah.
But it's still just torrenting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's been downhill since then.
The obsession has grown over time.
2020, I, like most high school students, I got kind of bored and lonely And so I thought, man, it'd be cool if I could just talk to people about the Beatles. And so I did that I started the podcast as a ruse, just to have people talk to me. But just, because it sounds better if you reach out, hey, Dr. Ken Womack,
right?
You want to talk about the Beatles on a right. Zoom call?
Like, yeah, sure.
Like, what for? It's like, what do you mean?
I've got nothing going on. Just thought I'd see if
I'm
you were
bored.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just text him, you up?
I kind of hope you do that. Whoa, you up? So yeah, so you're a 2020 podcast baby as well, like we are.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So like, what was kind of the? I mean, I guess that's probably like you were saying, just the desire to talk to people about the Beatles. Was there kind of like a moment where you were like, I think I'm going to do this? What kind of drove you to it? Because ours was, you know, was similar. Like, I started doing it just as like stuff to kind of post on Facebook every day, and then somebody was like, oh, this would be a fun podcast. And there we were.
Well, I had made some really cool connections at the 2019 Fest, which was my first one in Chicago, and I didn't want to, you know, have those connections, you know, completely dissipate.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, if I started a show, I could keep in touch with these people. Yeah. And also, I had always been really fascinated in hearing, you know, how people got into the Beatles, like what periods of time they got into them, whether they, you know, whether it was like the early 80s or the mid 2000s or the late 70s, you know, just very specific periods of time. And I thought, man, you know, I would love to hear a show about that.
Yeah.
And I, to my surprise, there was no show about that. So I had to make the show that I wanted to hear.
Which is kind of the best way to like create something that you like really can stand behind. Like,
yeah. It's not always the best for analytics.
Sure.
When your target audience is yourself.
Right. No, I get it, man. I've made a career out of music that only I like. So.
I look at the numbers like, okay, I guess people didn't enjoy the show where I just started talking about other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, 30-minute tangent about XTC.
Oh, wow. That's up Kyle's alley.
That is up
Kyle's
alley.
We should send that episode to Kyle.
I feel like we've had a tangent about XTC recently.
I feel like we have not because I don't know anything about them.
No?
So that okay, does maybe not I made track that with up. Me. Or maybe I just tuned it out because I'm like, I don't know anything you about this. And then I took a nap.
Ethan, let's talk about XTC. let's turn the page real quick.
Let's talk about XTC.
Wait, what's like the most surprising entry point that you've come across?
Ooh,
someone
yeah.
like, oh, I the first Beatles or the first like Beatle related song I heard was like Say or something like that, like something totally random, and you're like,
you backtrack from okay. Ebony and Ivory.
Yes, thank
all
you.
All the way.
There was one, you know, fairly recently that was kind of like that. I had Phoebe from Another Kind of Mind mm-hmm. on the show, and she got into them through, you know, 1983, 1984 era, you know, MTV,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, the McCartney stuff that was on then.
Yeah.
Amazing.
There's been a couple people where they've said they got into it through the Beatles Saturday morning cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for someone to tell me that they got it, that they heard Spies Like Us. And they were like, oh man, what else has this McCartney guy done? It just kept going.
Well.
Wow.
You better stay tuned to Fans on the Run in case that happens.
How many episodes have you done now? Do you know off the top of your head?
I want to say probably, I don't know the exact number. I think it's around 85.
Yeah. In the time that you've done these 85-ish episodes, what would you say is there something that you can point out that you feel like you've learned about the Beatles or your relationship with them or listeners' relationship that has kind of like surprised you or changed kind of something that you thought previously?
It's a good question. I'm not really sure. God, that sounds rather arrogant. Like, nothing's changed my mind at all.
Yeah.
I'm still set like in stone. The Beatles.
I don't really know. There are things over the, like, past few years that I've been, you know, quite proud of. Like,
such as?
Particular guests I've been able to get on the show. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and connections I made because, you know, just kind of off camera here. Well, off camera to everyone listening because right. No one can
they'll
see.
Never see what we see.
But I have a framed note on my wall or letter from Whispering Bob Harris from the Old Grey Whistle Test.
Nice.
At BBC. After I did an interview with him, he wrote me a very lovely note.
Aww. That's cool.
And I've had that kind of framed wherever I'm sitting, mm-hmm. just so I can look over and think, oh, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty neat. Yeah. That. Nice. Aww,
that's sweet. That was nice of him to do a handwritten note. People don't do handwritten notes.
I know.
Often
He sent me an autographed single as well.
Oh, cool.
Because he was doing a charity single.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's cool.
Very sweet.
Yeah. I just had a follow-up question I wanted to ask, and I forgot it.
Oh, come on, man.
I know.
Like
God
done
damn
this
it,
before.
Jonathan.
Ooh,
amateur
I remember
shit.
What it was. I remember what it was. Okay, hang on. You asked me a question when I was on your show that really kind of blew my mind in the own self-realization that I had for it. So I will turn and ask you the same question. What do the Beatles mean to you?
They're pretty good.
They got a couple good
man.
Songs.
I got to like espouse this whole like, you know, heartfelt thing.
Did you cry? You cried, didn't you?
I got a little emotional, man. Yeah. I got deep on it. Yeah.
Okay, I can try and give an answer. It's easier to ask that question than it is to answer.
Mm-hmm.
God, what don't the Beatles mean? You know, they've influenced nearly every facet of my life in some form or another. The way I listen to music, the way I, you know, talk about music, you know, my hobbies, the way I dress.
Mm.
my career, kinda. Yeah, they're the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's simple enough.
It's the Bloody Beatles White Album. Shut up.
what's in your world besides the Beatles? What other music are you into besides the Beatles?
Lately I've been on another big Daft Punk kick, because Daft Punk's one of my favorite bands besides the Beatles.
Okay.
Been listening to a lot of Kraftwerk, too.
Okay.
But mostly it still kind of falls within that British Invasion era.
Yeah. Interesting.
But like the obscure stuff from that time that no one really remembers.
Oh, such as?
And that record companies
don't like to reissue.
Oh, they'd love to reissue.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. There's such a big market for obscure 60s stuff that labels have been able to market to that audience for at least 40 years.
Yeah.
With great success.
And is it like, are you talking like compilation releases or like full catalog reissue type things?
Both.
Okay. So like what kind of bands are we talking about? Who are some that you're into?
Okay, there's some great groups from the 60s, like I mainly focus on the British ones. The Action are great, The Creation. You can get like really obscure and
any good Verb.
Like Wimple Winch.
Wimble Winch? That's a great name.
Wimple Winch.
That's great. That's a great name.
Yeah.
I have to look that up.
Oh, there are great names. Simon Dupree and the Big Sound. They had one
big
hit. There is no Simon Dupree.
I love that. It's even better.
Yeah. Jason Crest. There's no one in the band named Jason Crest.
What?
My favorite group name is Boeing Duveen and the Beautiful Soup.
Oh.
That's awesome.
All right.
I got to start a new band with a name like that.
Yeah. No, you don't. Please don't start a new band. You have too many things to do.
That's also true. Just change a name to something like that.
But at the end of the day, some of the, some groups that are a bit more obscure over here that are less obscure back in England, the Small Faces and the Move.
Sure.
Are, God, I love the Move.
Yeah. I feel like
I get into arguments with the Blotto Beatles guys.
Yeah.
Because I think it's Becker who doesn't really like Jeff Lynne. And so I've been trying to convert him.
Yeah.
With some of the early Jeff Lynne stuff with the Move and his first band, The Idle Race.
I knew The Idle Race. I don't know the Move, though.
Do you know the song Do Ya?
By the ELO song? Is that also a Move song?
It was a Move song first.
Interesting. Okay, okay. Good to know.
Do I know that song?
Sing it for her, Ethan.
Do you want my love?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want my love?
That's a jam.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I never see nothing like you.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't sing.
Neither can I. It's fine.
Jeff Lynne's got some jams, man. ELO had some tunes.
Okay. We're going to have to look up.
I have to look up the Move.
We're going to have to look up the Move.
Yeah.
We're in.
I'll send you some links.
Please do. Please do.
Give us the starter package. Here's a playlist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a dangerous can of worms you're opening.
Well, I tend to listen to the same five things over and over again. So send them over. I need some new shit.
You do. Yeah.
Well, what five things have you been listening to over and over?
Oh, God. This is going to sound like a plug, but I've mainly been listening to the SiriusXM Beatles channel for the last 4 months. But album-wise, and I guess, let's see, what have I been listening to lately? Ram has been on a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Thrillington, which is kind of the same thing anyway. I was listening to that when I was setting up today.
Oh, cute.
What else? The Monkees are usually in there.
Oasis
is usually in there. And some variation of any of the people from those bands. That's kind of about it. Blur. I bought a Blur record on Record Store Day.
Was it the Park Life?
Yeah, the Park Life reissue. Yeah. Super cool looking. I also got the Wonderwall Music reissue.
Yeah.
Which
I got both the Wonderwall and Electronic Sound.
Nice. I didn't get Electronic Sound. They didn't have it, but it wasn't on my list because I feel like I'm going to play it for Julia and she's going to be like, turn this shit off. This is just bleep bloops. I don't have time for this over breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Well, there's a big difference between Wonderwall music and Electronic Sound.
Yeah.
I could
George
be a
doesn't
total
play on either of them.
I could be a total contrarian and say Wonderwall music is my favorite George Harrison album.
That's a
which
good,
on some days it is.
That's a bold stance to take, and I like it.
Oh my God, it's great.
It's really cool.
Full of classical Indian music and then, great little bits of, whatever was floating around in the music sphere.
Guitar rock and whatever.
Yeah, a lot of backwards guitars and phased keyboards. Nothing gets me going like a piano through a Leslie speaker.
Peter Tork's in there playing banjo somewhere. Yeah, it's a weird record. It's fun.
Yeah. Electronic Sound is also an album.
That's the best description. It's also an album.
Yeah. Out of all of the albums George Harrison released between Wonderwall Music and All Things Must Pass, it is definitely the album.
That's accurate. For any listeners who don't know electronic sound.
Yeah, I'm going to tell me about this because I don't know what you're talking
about. Ethan, you want to give the elevator pitch?
Okay, so it's George Harrison, basically. Am I allowed to swear on this show?
Oh, yeah, all day.
It's George Harrison fucking around with a Moog synthesizer for basically an entire album. Mm-hmm. One side of which is just one long song called, I think it's Under or Over the Mersey Wall. I don't remember which.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the two tracks is just the guy who was setting up the synth for him doing the bleep bloops.
Yeah.
And George just recorded it and was like, cool, that's track two.
Yeah.
Like, yikes. It's not even him. It's a very experimental record.
Uh-huh. One of only two releases on the sub-label Zapple.
Zapple, yeah.
I mean, I feel like I like a Moog. Like, but you do. As a instrument, as part
as an
of
accompaniment.
A, yes, like it part works. Of oh, a project, part of a song,
I
not
love,
just like
I love me a Moog.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just not on its own.
Not necessarily.
Experimenting. Like
experimenting.
Yeah.
Yes, there's definitely a value in knowing what you're doing with it, and this is just turning the knobs and finding the sounds it makes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's those early synth records by, like, you know, Jean-Jacques Perry and Gershon Kingsley.
I don't know these.
You know the song Popcorn?
Yes. Oh, we know Popcorn. We know Popcorn.
Or there's a song that they did called, Baroque Hoedown, which became the, if you're familiar with the Disney World, the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Yeah,
that's,
I remember
the
that.
Music.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Oh, dang. Okay, I didn't know that was, wow.
Funny.
Cool. Now, like, Moog stuff enters my realm, like, in the 90s with, like, Weezer and the Rentals and bands that used it in that kind of capacity where it's, like, you know, it's the synth thing, you know, or it's, you know, it's what the Beatles do with it on Here Comes the Sun or things like that. You know, the Monkees use it in Daily Nightly and stuff like that. So it's more an accompaniment than it, as opposed to, like, here is my Moog symphony. Of just
well, my favorite use of the Moog on a Beatles song is Maxwell Silver Hammer.
Mm, yeah, tasteful.
Oh my god, so tasteful.
Yeah,
with the guitar. Mm-hmm. There's a on YouTube someone posted the isolated guitar and Moog track together.
Oh, cool.
And it's great.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of like the Brian Wilson idea of, like, let's do these two sounds together and create a new sound. Mm. And, like, give it the only time you hear that kind of combination. So that's that. I dig that kind of thing. It's a harder listen when it's like, here's 34 minutes of uncut Moog fucking around and, you know, just not my jam. But yeah. I'll buy it at some point. I didn't need the $40 reissue.
Do you need to buy it? Can you just scratch that itch online?
Nah, gotta have it.
Just stream it.
Gotta have it.
Can you not?
Gotta have it.
God.
Gotta have it.
We're running out of record space.
Nope. Gotta clean up the shelves.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Did you do the record store day thing? I know you're a big vinyl guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you pick up?
I got the George records and the two Yardbirds.
Nice.
Records. And then my friend helped me track down the Daft Punk 12-inch.
Nice.
Excellent.
Nice. Now, you also recently picked up a Rickenbacker 12-string, correct?
I did.
Do you have it handy before we dive into our Rickenbacker 12-string theme song today? Because it's kind of like this is the star of the show.
I wish it was handy.
Ah, okay.
It is over there.
Yeah.
And I'm over here.
Fair enough.
There's not enough space in my little recording cubby to hold a, you know, a Rickenbacker 12-string.
Fair enough.
But one of the first things I did play on it was...
Was this song?
The song we are discussing.
Nice. Put the capo on it, retuned every string. 45 minutes later, you're ready to go.
Yeah. I don't remember at this point who told me the joke, but the thing about Rickenbackers is the joke about Rickenbacker 12 strings. You spend half your time tuning them, and you spend the other half of your time playing out of tune.
I could see that, yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of all 12 strings, at least as far as I've found. Well, why don't we turn the page and let's talk about this song this week, shall we?
I guess. That's kind of why we're here.
Yeah. Nice.
That's my
page
that's
turn.
My impression of,
nicely done. All right, gang. Let's turn our attention to the song of the week. Coming in at number 92 is If I Needed Someone. George's 12-string guitar work in 1964, particularly its appearance in the Hard Day's Night film, helped spark the 12-string craze that would permeate the next few years of pop music and rock and roll. While he certainly wasn't the first guitarist to use a 12-string guitar, he was definitely the most prominent, and its appearance in the film and on record sent many a young guitarist down to the shop to find their own Rickenbacker 12-string, or whatever variation they could afford. Now, one of these shoppers was Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, who earlier in the year had begun the group as a trio with David Crosby and Gene Clark. McGuinn has often spoken of leaving the movie theater after seeing A Hard Day's Night and going straight to the guitar shop and buying a Rickenbacker 12-string, which, along with the Byrds' harmony vocals and electric versions of folk music, would become the defining sound of the Byrds. And as the Byrds became famous in their own right, their paths naturally crossed with the Beatles, and both groups became friends and peers in addition to being fans of each other. Now, by the fall of 1965, George had presumably started to get a bit detached from his 12-string Rickenbacker. It had been the defining sound of the 1964 Beatles guitar tone, but it was much less prevalent on the Help album, especially as his interest in the sitar grew. George started looking forward to new sounds. But before he put the Rick down for good, he wrote a song which generously borrows the guitar part from another Rickenbacker 12-string song, the Byrds' track The Bells of Rimney.
Oh, what will you give me? Say the sad bells of Rimney. Is there hope for the future?
Now, George's song, If I Needed Someone, was brought into the sessions for Rubber Soul on October 16th, only the third day of recording for the album. And after the band spent the bulk of the session working on Day Tripper, they spent the final hour of their evening session rehearsing George's tune before capturing a keeper backing track in one take, featuring George on his Rickenbacker 12-string, capoed at the 7th fret, John on his Fender Stratocaster, Paul on bass, and Ringo on drums. They returned to the song on October 18th when George recorded and double-tracked his vocals. John and Paul add their harmonies, also double-tracked. George then added additional 12-string guitar to the song, and Ringo added tambourine. The song was released on Rubber Soul December 3rd. It was performed live by the band throughout their final British tour at the end of 1965, and then at all shows throughout 1966. And also, it was the only George Harrison-composed song the Beatles ever performed live, as previously, his vocal spots in the shows were always cover songs. George was open about the inspiration he took from the Byrds on this song, often mentioning it in interviews, and even sent the band an advance copy of the album with a thank you note. Roger McGuinn covered the song himself in 2002 as well. Now, coincidentally, on December 3rd, 1965, the same day Rubber Soul was released, the Hollies released a cover of the song, having also heard it early somehow. But it wasn't a cover George was particularly fond of, to the point of where he trashed the song in the press at the time, calling it rubbish, and stating, quote, They're all right musically, but the way they do their records, they sound like session men who've just got together in a studio without ever seeing each other before. Technically, they're good, but that's all. Their version of the song charted at number 20 in the UK and was the first time a George Harrison song ever hit the charts. So, why do I have If I Needed Someone at 92? So this is one of those songs that kind of really encapsulates the transitional Beatles for me. It's this kind of moment where the early Beatles start to get a bit trippy. You've still got the 12-string, which is really kind of the defining Beatlemania sound, but now it's introduced in this more droney way. Paul adds this real repetitive bass line underneath, and it's a similar bass line to what he'd do the following year on Tomorrow Never Knows. That bass line also kind of becomes the default psychedelic Beatles bass line for any band that does a psychedelic Beatles-inspired tune going forward. Anyone from the Monkees all the way to Oasis to anyone else who does that kind of thing nowadays. Tame Impala, whoever. They all do the dom, doom, loom, doom kind of thing. Who'd have thunk? The harmonies that run throughout the verses are just amazing, especially Paul's parts. He's just phenomenal on here. The vocals all over really add to that kind of Birds flair that George is going for on this song. And I also feel that there's just kind of an overall vibe through this song that I can only describe as stoned ambivalence. Like, lyrically, George is kind of approaching this feeling of, I guess if I was lonely, you'd be all right. But also, maybe I'm kind of with someone else, but like, carve your number on the wall, and if I don't lose it, maybe I'll holler at you, which is pretty damn ambivalent. Musically, they're not really pushing anything dynamically. It's pretty laid back performance-wise for being an electric guitar-based song. It's very chill. It's all very stoned feeling. It kind of feels like the cover of the album looks. So while lyrically, it's kind of obtuse and just whatever, sonically, it just sounds so damn good. The 12-string is bright and full and just what you want a 12-string guitar to sound like. The vocals are just sublime. You know, honestly, George could be reading a Chinese food menu, and if it sounds like this song, I'd still have it at 92. It's that great sounding of a song, and I think that's what really puts it so high up on the list for me. It's a brilliant sounding track. So maybe it's kind of like Cotton Candy-ish. Like, I don't know that I am super, you know, into the song itself, but the track itself is just amazing to me. So that's my thoughts. Ethan, I throw it over to you, my friend. What do you think?
I'll start with an observation I made just kind of recently when I was re-listening to the song. The middle eight is kind of similar to the middle eight in the one of the George songs from the next album, Revolver. There's a lot of similarities with I Want to Tell You. Like, they both kind of, I think they're in the same key, and they both go to that B minor.
Yeah.
But, God, I love If I Needed Someone. The three-part harmony double-tracked just sounds angelic. And it really does kind of, to me, it just sounds like the Beatles on a high. More like metaphorically and not literally.
Yeah.
Even though they probably were very, very
high.
What was the phrase? Stoned ambivalence.
Stoned ambivalence. Yeah.
Yeah, God, it's great. And that Rickenbacker. My God.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. What I'm this is why I'm not good at being on shows. It's my typical format of saying, like, yeah, what can you say?
Yeah.
It's like, amazing.
Say more.
Right. Tell me more, Ethan. What do you like about it? No, I'm with you. Like, it's one of those, like, sometimes it's just like, Jesus, guys, come on. Like, leave some for the rest of us. Good God.
Yeah.
I don't know how to compete with that.
The Hollies version. Yeah. If memory serves correct, you said it went to like number 20 something in the UK 20. Charts.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it did so poorly by the standards of the Hollies is because of George Harrison trashing them in like Melody Maker and NME. Because the Hollies were, you know, in their prime, you know, hit making scene, you know, with Look Through Any Window, I'm Alive, you know, Next Year, Bus Stop,
Hey Carrie Ann, like all that's around here.
It's they were allergic to not being in like the top five.
Yeah.
And you know, the one George Harrison cover they do ends up, you know, throwing them off course.
And to their credit also, like, so George and the Melody Maker says, you know, that he thinks it's a trash record, but they kind of fire right back. Like, they got a little beef going, man. Like,
they do. And the next song the Hollies put out as a single was kind of, they really wanted to prove George Harrison wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, I think it was Graham Nash, you know, wrote I Can't Let Go just to be like the best record they could possibly do to prove the Beatles wrong.
Yeah.
And McCartney praised that one when it came out as a sort of olive branch.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Do you know that like, song?
See, we don't hate the Hollies.
No, and honestly, I don't know much more than like the kind of the singles of the Hollies. Like I could probably name, you know, five or six off of like a playlist that I, you know, that I would know, but
yeah.
I don't know too much of the catalog. The everything I know by them, I'm like, yeah, I'm in. This is great. And Graham Nash is fantastic. So,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, I feel like it was kind of justified though. Like to drop it on the same day as their record.
Yeah,
like,
that's kind of a cheap move.
Yeah, that was a real dick move.
Like, I don't know if that was intentional.
Yeah.
Because they were on the same label.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was kind of fair game.
Yeah.
Because the Hollies went to Dick James Publishing, and they were just like, "Oh, let's see what songs we could do."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, George Harrison's song was registered with Dick James.
Right.
And so they're like, "Okay, let's do this one. It's fair game."
Yeah. Hmm. Wow.
But it happened to come out at around the same time.
I mean, at some point, should have been like, "It's the same." Someone should push.
Yeah.
And it should be the Hollies because you're doing the cover.
Yeah.
It's weird to have a cover of a song coming out the same day. Like.
Yeah. I mean, and well, maybe it was not kind so of much common. Then. Yeah.
Like, was it?
It wasn't common in the sense that it was like the same day, but there were tons of hits that people had with, you know, Beatles album tracks because the Beatles didn't put it out themselves as a single.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a couple people who had big hits with Michelle. There was a group, The Overlanders. There was David and Jonathan.
Right, but like, you know, later.
Putting out, yeah, sort of later.
Yeah. And my issue
but like,
is
they're
date.
Still contemporary. Like, yeah, I think the date thing is probably, I would have to assume.
Yeah.
Bad
someone
planning
goofed.
On the company's
yeah,
fault,
someone
but
goofed.
Yeah.
And they were on the same, they were both on Parlophone, so.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe EMI thought, you know, this would be good, you know, synergy.
And there was probably also the thought of like, that. Yeah, it would make for good press until George opened his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What
do you think of this one?
Because
you weren't super familiar with this song, right?
I knew it, but not like super duper familiar. I do really like it though. I think like what you said, like the sound of it is really beautiful. I kind of honestly do enjoy his ambivalence, like his stone ambivalence, like his sort of attitude through it. Like he's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Like he's a little bit of a fuckboy. Like Yep. Like, I don't know. You can put your number on my phone. Maybe I'll call you. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll see. You know.
I just realized something. Maybe if I needed someone and I want to tell you, we're kind of as parts one and two, because it's the same stoned ambivalence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's George at first saying, you know, if I do eventually want someone, you know, I'll come and find you. And I want to tell you is like, okay, yeah, now it's time. It's time. I feel hung up and I don't know why.
But also, if I seem to be unkind, it's only me. It's not my mind. Like, yeah, okay, whatever, dude. You're just high. You're just stoned.
Just looking for someone to cuddle with.
Yeah. Just looking for a friend.
It is, I went and listened to the bird song that you mentioned. I was like, oh yeah, he totally ripped this off from the bird song.
Yeah.
But also that bird song sounds like 36 other bird songs. So I don't know. They're kind of just ripping themselves off. So that's fair.
Yeah.
At least he acknowledged it. I don't know. How does that work? Like was there like publishing back then? Like,
yeah, there was, but I mean, there was
so much covering that they just like, yeah, and like
it's the melodic pattern is similar of the guitar part, the kind of ba da 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 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think really they were friends, and he was just like,
yeah,
he was open about it. He thanked them, you know, in a thank you note.
The music industry was, I think, a much less litigious place.
Yeah, like
because now if that would have happened now, even if you know they were friends,
yeah.
Yeah.
There would be a lawsuit, and
they'd get a co-write.
McGuinn would have gotten, you know, half of the royalties.
Yeah. And a co-write. No, not Verve Pipe. The Verve. Is it Verve?
Oh, with Bittersweet Symphony. Yeah.
I'm like, they didn't. He wasn't gonna like Verve him.
Alan Klein, shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, but how successful were the Birds? Were they like financially successful?
Yeah, I think. I mean, not by that point,
Beatles level.
Yeah, I mean, I think by that point, by 65,
they weren't Beatles level. Yeah. But they had had Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah,
pretty big hit.
Yeah,
so they were good.
Yeah, they were fine. Okay. And they, I mean, they were in kind of, I think, their period of, you know, multiple chart toppers, and they were doing fine at that point. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's like, yeah, it's just like a very pretty song. Like the harmonies are great. Even the harmonies sound very like Birds to me. Just like that style of, I guess it's doubling the heart. What did you say?
Yeah, double track, like a 3-part harmony thing. Yes. So it's like 6 voices.
Yeah. Like that sounds very like, once you were like reading it and like mentioned the Birds and I like went and listened to the song, I was like, oh,
yeah,
I hear all of this. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, very birdsy. Okay. Yeah. But it's great. Like, it's really beautiful. It's sonically beautiful. The bass line is very cool. I feel like is that like a very sort of heavy-ish bass line for a Beatles track so far in their career?
Yep.
Because we were listening to it on the big speakers, and there's like just a very like boom. Like, it was very like heavy, and I don't know. It just sounded bigger than I'm used to hearing from them.
Yeah. And Paul's using his Rickenbacker at that point. I'm pretty sure, which has a much kind
sounds
of
like that.
Yeah, it's got a big boomier tone that's a lot more low end and not quite as like plucky as the Hofner is.
Yes.
So
Yes.
It's got some proper knock to it.
Yeah. Yes.
That's a technical term. We use in the biz.
Yeah, that's what we call in the biz. Proper knock.
Yeah.
Prop knock. But yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
It was nice to sit down and listen to it with intention because I know I have heard it before, but it's never been like a super often rotation song. Yeah. So,
I've been listening to it a lot lately in preparation, and
we can tell.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Well, you talked about the proper knock.
He did. That's true. Yep. You got me there.
I acknowledged the prop knock.
I think one of the interesting things about this one, especially, is that, you know, this was the one that they picked to do live. You know, like one of the few Rubber Soul songs that they did live. They did it pretty much for the rest of their touring years. And it's one of the more difficult George tunes from this point. I mean, just, you know, thinking logistically, putting a capo on a 12-string and being in tune without a tuner on stage is really a crapshoot, especially when you're playing outdoors.
That's why most of the live recordings from '66
are challenging.
Sound like shit.
Well, and that's the other bummer is like arguably the best quality recording you have of the Beatles as a touring act is in Tokyo, and it's, you know, not a very great performance.
No. And like you can really,
you can tell they can hear themselves finally, but they're just,
and they're not pleased.
They're not happy.
They can hear themselves and they're like, "Wow, we've let ourselves go."
It's that shot of like Ringo playing drums and just looking like he's smelling a fart at the same time, just like, "Oh God,
what happened there?"
They just
had an off night.
They had five off shows.
Oh,
they did. I think five shows at the Budokan, like 1, 2, and 2. They were there for like 3 nights, and it was like filmed and broadcast over on TV there. So, like, you have these great multicam color, you know, performances, and they just sound unrehearsed. They sound off key, just not great.
Yikes!
And this is like one of like the worst songs on that thing. But then, if you listen, there's the audio is floating around from Candlestick Park. From the last tour, the last show of the last tour, and there's audio of this, and it's pretty good, man. Like, they're killing it. They're doing great on it. And this is when, like, you know, they have no PA that they can hear themselves on. They're playing through the speakers in the stadium, mm-hmm. And they kill it. It sounds fine, you know? It's great. Mm-hmm. So it's very strange. I also love how Paul changes his harmony in the instrumental section. Because he's just doing this high, and then he does this thing that he does in I Want to Tell You at the end. He does this kind of like Indian inflection thing, which he does at the end of I Want to Tell You. And it's like, oh, that's cool. Where did he pull that from? So,
because they probably had recorded.
Yeah, they'd already done that.
I Want to Tell You.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I'm going to stick that in here. That'll be fun. So, yeah, I mean, because...
Well, the Revolver was out.
Was out, yeah, by that time, yeah. So it's interesting because you figure they probably would have had an easier time doing, like, Think for Yourself or something like that. Or you've got a keyboard on stage if you want to do I Want to Tell You. Like, you could have done that, but they picked this difficult three-part harmony thing. Unfortunately, kind of struggled with
it. They could have done Dr. Robert.
Yeah, I mean... But, I mean, as far as, like, George tunes... go.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was just,
they could have done Taxman.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't do Taxman. I mean, Lord knows why I think they were just kind of checked out at that point, but yeah. Maybe when the inevitable Peter Jackson Live at the Budokan reissue comes out, they can just like just auto-tune it a little bit. Just smooth it out.
they can
fly in some
get hooked
vocals.
Up with they can get hooked up with whoever's been producing the Ringo stuff.
Linda Perry, man. Four non-blondes. Yeah,
Perry. They can pull a T-Pain.
Oh,
just auto-tune the shit out of it.
But man, have you ever heard T-Pain sing without auto-tune?
Oh, he's great.
He's fantastic.
You've heard him doing a War Pig?
Yes, it's so good. It's incredible. Like, put that over Record Store Day. I'll buy that. That whole session was killer. Oh man. Well,
actually, now that we're talking about recordings, so I don't know if you know this, but the Red and Blue albums came out again last year.
Do tell. Let's talk about them.
Yeah. To me, If I Needed Someone was one of the standouts.
Yes.
Because I just loved how it sounded.
Yeah. That was the mix I played for you, which is probably one of the reasons why the bass sounds so good, and definitely it sounds good on the Rubber Soul version, for sure. But on the new reissue, it really shines. And that record sounds great with this remix. You can hear, like, the drums are finally kind of present in the mix. The tambourine
The one thing I will say, the drums are kind of lacking a little bit of high end.
Yeah.
That I was A-B-ing it with the version from, you know, 2009, Rubber mm-hmm. Soul. And... the drums, like, it was like missing a bit of the sheen from the hi-hat.
Interesting. I wonder if the 12-string just takes up a lot of that frequency to make it so sparkly, you just kind of lose that battle.
Yeah.
12-strings make things hard, man. They really do. I love them, but They're a difficult baby to carry around.
Yeah.
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 Don't you agree, Julia?
Yes, 100%.
Play us a little something on the 12th string, would you? Well, all right. Let's wrap this guy up here. At 92 out of 223, nay, 224 if we include Now and Then. Do you think having If I Needed Someone at 92 is in the right place? Is it the right ballpark? Too high? Too low?
I think if it was my list, it would be, a fair bit higher.
Yeah. Okay.
Than 92.
Okay.
Because this is one of my favorite Beatles songs.
Okay. Okay.
It's my favorite song on Rubber Soul.
Really? Okay. I can get with that.
Yeah. And actually, now that we're talking about your list, before this, I had a look at where you'd been ranking some songs, and
do you have some grievances to air?
I've got some questions.
Sure.
Why the fuck is "P.S. I Love You" so low?
Oh God. it just doesn't do it for me. I know people love it, and I'm cool with that. It just doesn't really tickle the itch for me very well.
You know what? I can respect that, though.
Like, it was on yesterday in the car. I was driving somewhere, and I went to go pick up dinner. I went to go pick up a pizza, and I turned on the car, and that was on, and I was like, nah. Just switch the station for 3 minutes.
For it being, like, the first Beatles, being on the first Beatles single,
yeah,
it's so melodically kind of complex in my eyes.
Yeah. Like it's got good stuff going for it.
It's certainly more complex than I'll Get You, which you ranked high.
But I like, I like I'll Get You. Like
I love both of them.
Yeah. It just does something more for me. And there are moments.
But then again, that's why it's your show.
Right. But also, like, with P.S. I Love You, like, I love the three little, like, kind of separate inflections they all do in the last verse. You know, the as I write, you know I want you to. Like, I love those little bits. Like, those are cool. But the rest of it just kind of is like, I'll be back in 2 minutes and 15 seconds. It's cool. Go on. What else, Ethan?
Have you done Tomorrow Never Knows yet?
Oh, no. No. We got a long ways to go to that one, buddy.
Good. Well, you can bring me back for that one.
Any other floggings you would like to issue? Sam always has a couple when I talk to him.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Sam always has a lot to say.
He's got gripes. He's always got a gripe.
Yeah. No, I love Sam.
He's good people.
We do too. Our nephew.
I mean, everyone has a different relationship. I should know this. I'm not going to say I should know this more than anyone because it's the whole shtick of my show.
Right.
But everyone has a different relationship with the Beatles music, mm-hmm. and everything hits someone differently.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. I can't count the number of times I've been on a show or something and someone asks me, why do you like this or why do you not like it? And all I can say is just like, I don't know. It just doesn't.
It's the way my brain works.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't jive.
Yeah, was like Here, There, and Everywhere with mm-hmm. Dave Depper.
Yeah.
You two were just like going on and on about how amazing the song is. And I'm just like, it's fine. And the two of you are like, are you dead inside? And I'm like, well, yes, but also it just doesn't hit for me.
But then also I have it at number 111 out of 223 and we're gushing about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why is it at 111? I'm like, because they're all great.
If I can send your audience on a little wild goose chase, if they so wish, if we're talking about just rating stuff with your gut review and nothing else,
mm-hmm.
For a period of time, I was making guest appearances on this one guy's show, and he was going through every Beatles album, and I was a guest on most of them, and it got to the point where it's like, hey, Ethan, what do you think of Here Comes the Sun? I'm like, yeah, love it. It's like, what do you like about it? It's like, yeah, it's a good song.
It's a tune.
Yeah. Or I would just be like,
Yeah. Thumbs up.
And I just like give a thumbs up.
Like, which is great for a podcast.
Great podcast answer.
Yeah. Why do you like it? I like it.
Because it rocks.
Yeah. No, why do you like it? Because I do.
It's just good, man.
I like it because it's a song that I like, and that's why I like it.
Why do you like breathing so much? Because it's cool.
God, get off my back, man. I'm here for a fun time.
Right. I can feel that, though. Julia, what do you think on this one? Too high, too low?
Thinking about all of the stuff that we have not gotten to yet, I feel pretty good about the placement.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know that I would move it higher. It is it's a really good song.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would move it later because, like, I'm just thinking about everything that we haven't talked about yet.
For sure.
And there's a lot of very good in there. Like things that I'm like, oh, this should be number one. That like should Old Brown not Shoe. Be number one. No.
Have you done one. The Long and Winding Road yet?
Oh, Ethan, we did the Long and Winding Road a long time ago, buddy.
That's right. Thank you.
We did the Long and Winding Road.
It should be the bottom of the fucking list.
Number 211 was the Long and Winding Road.
So there's two members of the Long and Winding Road Haters Club.
there's a long running inside joke on Fans on the Run. Whenever I ask the people who are on the show what their favorite Beatles album, least favorite Beatles album, and even like, you know, favorite song, least favorite song, I always joke that there are secret correct answers to these. And so sometimes I wonder if, like, first-time listeners to my show think, is this all your show is?
Right.
Just one big, you know, circle jerk of references that only you will understand?
Those are kind of the best shows.
Which is, yeah.
That is our
yeah.
show.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Well, before we wrap for the day, and I didn't realize that I stole this from you, apparently, some rapid fire questions. Can I throw a few your way?
If you insist. No, I would love to.
Excellent. Your favorite Beatles song?
Tomorrow Never Knows.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Okay. Your least favorite Beatles song?
Long and Winding Road.
We had a friend of mine who's a musician here named Paul Sanchez on for that show, and he, to this day, on a fairly bi-weekly basis, is just like, in some, whether it's a text message or a Facebook comment,
yep,
it's just like, I don't know how you did this. How could you put this song there, you misguided idiot?
It is one of the few Beatles songs that if it comes on the comes on the radio, I will change the station.
Yeah,
because it's like, I am not listening to this again.
Mm-hmm. I will say
there are a couple, including some very controversial picks, like I'll Follow the Sun.
Don't like it, or you do like it?
I don't like it. Okay. And I'll change the station.
I don't know that I would change the station. There's not many I would change the station for. I do like I'll Follow the Sun, though. That's a good one. I enjoy that.
What else? What are your thoughts on Hey Jude?
Coming around on it again after being just completely burnt out on it. You know the thing, if you don't listen to that song for like 5 years, you listen to it again, it's like, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
No wonder it was a number one.
Right.
And then you hear it 700 times in a 3 week span and you're like, okay, tap it out.
I couldn't listen to Let It Be for years. Ooh. And then I thought, like, oh man, that guitar solo. The album version.
Yeah. You ever have that thought with Hey Jude? Like, I have the same thought with Layla. I could do without this back half. Like, it just keeps going, man. God Lord.
Yeah, I could do with 4 less minutes of Hey Jude.
I could get a radio edit. I wouldn't hate a radio edit. Your favorite Beatles album?
Again, with the secret correct answer on Fans on the Run. Revolver.
Yeah. All right. your least favorite Beatles album?
Let It Be.
Okay, okay. Who's your favorite Beatle?
Groucho. No.
There is a right and wrong answer, and it's Clarence.
Yeah. She loves you, man.
Help me, man.
Yeah. She got a ticket to ride, and the bitch don't care.
You not know this, Julia?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, my God. There's an SNL skit from the Eddie Murphy years where his name is Clarence, and he claims he was the fifth Beatle, and they've erased him from the history. He's like, I wrote all those songs. She Loves You? That was called She Loves You, Man. Help? I wrote that one. It was called Help Me, Man.
Yeah.
And all these pictures of the Beatles with him, like, crudely photoshopped in playing the saxophone. It's absolutely hilarious. I'm going to put that in the links for the show notes so listeners can know what we're talking about.
Like, if I find them boys, I'm going to, you know, shove my foot up their ass so hard the breath is going to smell like shoe polish.
It's so good. All right.
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live sketch with where it's, God, what's his name? The guy who wrote the really nasty John Lennon book, Albert Goldman.
No.
Where it's the five Beatles, John, Paul, George, Albert, Goldman, and Ringo.
Oh, God, no.
Where he plays, like, the French horn.
No.
And, you know, Dana Carvey's playing McCartney. He's like, I think we've got to talk about Albert. And then Elvis shows up.
I've got to find that. No, Dana Carvey does a great Paul.
Who's the leader of the band? Yeah, I'm the leader of the band. Then you're gonna have to be the one to tell him. Oh, the leader of the band. Well, John's the leader of the band.
I've not seen that one.
I'll send you the link.
Please do.
I have it stashed in a Google Drive.
All right, last one. Your favorite memory associated with the Beatles, in which the Beatles are present musically. Personally, in some way, your favorite memory?
This last hour.
Ethan, that's pure bullshit, and I love it.
Yeah. What it might be, honestly, is my favorite moment involving the Beatles in my life was probably... when I was in England, thanks to a friend, I got to go to Abbey Road Studios for a one-on-one private tour.
Bruh, dude,
and
jeez.
Being inside Studio 2, and I got to, you know, play around on the Mrs. Mills piano. Ugh. I did the Day in the Life chord.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was one of the most, you know, transfixing moments of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, I could barely speak. I was just, I had to keep apologizing to the guy who was showing me around, because all I would say is, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
That's
got to be.
And just the fact that I've met so many people that I consider to be friends.
Yeah.
Like you guys.
Yeah.
Through the Beatles and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's how the Beatles have changed my life.
That's, aww, I love it, man. That's the beauty of it all.
I thought you were going to say record shopping with the Blattos, but I guess the Abbey Road story is better.
Yeah, Abbey Road wins.
the Blattos, you know, I've been record shopping with a lot of Beatle podcasters at this point. I've been record shopping with both of the guys behind Two Legs,
nice.
Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols. I've been record shopping with Sam Wiles. I've been record shopping with the Blottos. If you count the Fest dealer's room, you know, a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll tell you a particular story after we get off, because I don't want this, you know, tainting my reputation.
The hot goss. I love it.
Well, now
the
I feel like goss. We need to go record shopping together.
Right? So
I'm really sad we missed shopping with you guys.
Well, I kept asking you guys to buy me stuff. You said no. So you have no one but yourself.
Is this, you're just record shopping the people to curry favor and gifts.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty smart, actually. Well done, Ethan.
Well, when we go back up for the next fest, which I think we're going to do New York next year, we'll rendezvous early and go shopping somewhere in the city.
Yes.
We'll do it upright.
Yes.
Well, Ethan, man, this has been a blast, man. For our listeners who don't already follow Fans on the Run and follow you, where can they find the show? Where can they follow you on your social media? All that good stuff. Plug away.
Ha ha, that's right, Jonathan. you can go to, at this point now, I have a website up it's more for myself, but you can find everything Fans on the Run there, ethanalexanian.com.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've plugged that website.
Yes.
Because I did it for a school thing, and now it's there. But, we're on all the social media platforms, some variation of Fans on the Run podcast, the artist formerly known as Twitter, where Fans on the Run pod, Threads, Fans on the Run, because no one's on Threads.
Right.
So I was able to get it.
Attaboy.
basically anywhere you can find Ranking the Beatles, you can find Fans on the Run.
Yes. Yes.
Spotify, Apple, Google, just search Fans on the Run on Google, and I'm the other Fans on the Run.
Look for the one with the good artwork.
I'm not the Fans on the Run that go to all the concerts.
Yeah.
I'm the other Fans on the Run that is just borrowing the name.
Excellent. Well, Ethan, thank you, bud. It's been a pleasure to catch up. Ethan Alexanian, everybody. Soon.
Good times. What a dude.
The pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
I wish I had his closet.
I bet you do.
I need to get some of his clothes. His wares are impressive.
I feel like you should get your own clothes.
Well, yeah, I don't want to take his clothes, but I think he has his style is...
Maybe you should go shopping together.
Ooh.
Next time we go to Beetlefest, you guys should plan to go a day early.
Yeah.
And we can just go shopping.
I love it.
Okay.
Make it a plan. Let's do that.
Ethan, I know you're listening. Let's have a shopping.
Record shopping, clothing shopping. Oh my God, it's going to be the best.
I feel like I'm more into clothing shopping. I can't do record shopping like you guys do. I'm good for one store.
Yeah.
So maybe one record store and then seven clothing stores and I'm good to go.
Okay. I will hold you to this.
Are you making note?
RIP to our checking account.
It's
but
fine.
But it's okay.
We'll just budget for it.
Yeah. Friends, what do y'all think about If I Needed Someone coming in at number 92? Is it too high? Is it too low? Or just like old Baby Bear's porridge, is it?
Just right.
That's right. Let us know what you think wherever you listen to Ranking the Beatles. If you're looking for us on social media, you can find us just about everywhere. Find us on Facebook at
Ranking the Beatles.
You can find us on Instagram at
Ranking the Beatles.
And you can find us on Twitter, because we still call it that, at
Ranking Beatles.
Correct.
I got it.
You did it. You nailed it. It's like you never missed a show. be sure to check out rankingthebeatles.com, your home for all things Ranking the Beatles. Grab yourself a poster. You can rank your own dang Beatles if you want to, or you can get a t-shirt or a sweatshirt if you're in a place where it's sweatshirt weather still. It's not here. So, but grab yourself a little something. Buy us a coffee if you're into it. Leave us a review. We haven't gotten a review in a dog's age. We'd
leave
love to know.
Leave us a good review.
Yeah, leave us a good review. That's
the
caveat.
Don't leave us a grumpy review.
Yeah.
But if you have good things to say about us, go ahead.
We'd love to hear them.
Go do a little tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this week, y'all. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Thanks for sticking around. Until next week, I am Jonathan.
And I'm Julia.
This has been Ranking the Beatles. Adios.
Bye, y'all.